Welcome to our Saturday simulcast, Sunday version, but recording here after Purdue's pretty much heart-stopping 69-67 win over Indiana. We're the day after we're recording. I want to thank our sponsor, the Union Club Hotel, and all that they have. Brian and I had a nice visit there on Thursday, and a good show with Thursday Night Live. Tom Dienhart was in the house as well as one of our spectators. So we appreciated that, but appreciate Vicky Wicks and all that they did to make that happen. All right, Brian, never a dull moment, as they say about every week in this. You rephrased it in your rap video. I think the term you were used was harrowing victory over Indiana. Purdue gets out alive with a 69-67 win on senior day. Nothing was easy about it, especially in the second half. Having about 20 hours in between the end of that game and now, any other impressions or thoughts as Purdue moves ahead to the Big Ten tournament?
Well, I was asleep for most of that time, so I wasn't exactly thinking about the game. I was trying to get my cat to stop waking me up in the middle of the night. Stuck his cold little nose in my ear a few times, which was not appreciated. This was kind of some of Purdue's, ongoing problems sort of reasserting themselves at the worst time. Purdue has been prone to these spells of turnovers all season long. Purdue has been prone to not handle success well. When they went up 8 points and Sasha Stefanovic and Eric Hunter had made those big threes, that game was over. Those were the shots. I think there's a difference between a shot and the shot. I think you know it when you see it. When somebody makes a shot at a certain time in a game, in a certain situation, it's the shot. And I think both Stefanovic and Hunter made really big threes there that really should have busted this game open and kind of set Purdue up to win this game going away. But, what Purdue has done all season long, more so earlier in the year, is when things are going good, they either let up or they get casual. And I don't know if it's about putting on a show or whatever, but that stretch of turnovers where they turned the ball over 5 times in 6 trips was, the worst of Purdue at the worst time. And that's the reason you had to survive this thing at the very end. The free throw shooting is kind of like a mini fatal flaw for Purdue, where it kind of comes and goes. But the turnovers are the fatal flaw, and the turnovers have kind of a deep rooted, I think, origin in Purdue. And I think it has to do with oftentimes them just not handling success very well, or I don't know if yesterday had something to do with them wanting to play to the crowd or whatever, or really stick it to their rival or whatever. But that stretch there where they turned the ball over all those times, that was just them getting loose with the ball, them getting casual, them, playing to make things more aesthetically pleasing than they might have been otherwise. And Purdue's just, I've been saying this all year long, and it is now March 6th. So expecting change is, probably not all that realistic an expectation, but they got to get this out of their system. Or they just have to rewire themselves heading into the NCAA tournament and handle themselves better when they're ahead. But to Purdue's credit, to the seniors' credit, especially, I thought they were good down the stretch. I thought all three of those guys kind of rose to the occasion on their occasion. And, Purdue was fortunate to win. And I think a lot of that still also has to do with Xavier Johnson losing his mind in the last couple seconds of that game as well. Not to say that they definitely would have scored to tie it or go ahead in the final seconds, but the way Purdue's season is gone, I think all bets were off in terms of the things that could possibly happen in a situation like that. That being said, Indiana has failed in those situations time and time again also. So, it was the immovable object versus the unstoppable force.
Yeah. Ryan, what do you think Purdue has at stake in the Big Ten tournament? Obviously, you want to win it and you want to build some momentum and get everybody on track. But I guess to the point, it looks like Purdue's probably going to settle in and maybe as a number three seed in the NCAA tournament. Is there anything Purdue can do to really enhance its seeding for the big dance?
I wouldn't think so. But if I were Purdue, I'd want to win this thing. I know people would look at it like you never want to play that game on Sunday right before the NCAA tournament. I get that totally, because the NCAA tournament is much more important than the Big Ten tournament. But the fact that you didn't get a championship to show for a team that at one point in time was number one in the country, I think leaves a little bit of an unfulfilling sort of element to this season. And I know it's not the same thing to win the Big Ten tournament as to win the regular season, but you're still going to hang a banner if you win it, probably. It would still be something that would go in the historical record of in this team's favor. I would want to win that thing. I would also, if I were Purdue, I'd want to get certain teams in that thing, and I would want to beat the hell out of them. I would want another shot at Michigan State. I would want another shot at Indiana. I would want – the only team I wouldn't want to play is Illinois, because I just – so much goes into playing Illinois. I just don't think you want anything to do with that going into the NCAA tournament. I'd want Wisconsin again, and I'd want to beat all three of those teams that I just mentioned. I know it's not going to lay out that way, but Purdue lost some games this year that they absolutely positively should not have lost. And the one that jumps out more than any other nowadays, to me anyway, as bad as Rutgers was, as bad as the first Wisconsin game was, as bad as the second Wisconsin game was, as bad as the first Indiana game was, it's that Michigan State game. I mean, that was just a very average Michigan State team just getting out of the way and letting Purdue beat itself, and Purdue obliged. And I would want them. If I were a vengeful individual, and if Purdue were a vengeful team, I would want blood in that Big Ten tournament.
You sound like a vengeful individual.
You are vengeful.
Yeah, but I would disagree. I agree with what you say on all the fronts, but I think if Purdue wins the Big Ten tournament, it will be a number two seed. Not that that matters all that much, or it has a good chance to be a two seed. It really doesn't matter. I mean, whether you're a two or three seed, all that much in the NCAA tournament right now. It looks like they'll play in Indianapolis for the first two games, and who knows? You're going to have a rough road to hoe just because there's so much parity. You know, we see last night Duke losing at home, which I still can't believe they lose at home when they're saying goodbye.
What a shame.
Yeah.
What a terrible, terrible shame that was.
I didn't sleep a wink last night.
Oh, I know, right?
Yeah. 13-point loss to a team, you know, that has to in some ways help Purdue, I guess, in some weird way, at least a fan base, because he beat North Carolina. And,
well, if anybody watched the first North Carolina Duke game, that was an evisceration.
Oh, yeah.
I actually watched that game. North Carolina didn't look like they were coached. Yeah. They were so bad in that game. Duke,
right. Absolutely. The one in Chapel Hill, you mean, yeah.
Duke, yeah. Did to North Carolina what like Duke would do to like Chicago State. I mean, that was as one-sided a game at that level of college basketball as I think I've ever seen. It was just unbelievably bad. And for North Carolina to come back and return the favor on that occasion was just unbelievable.
Stunning. One of the more stunning events of the year, in my opinion. I mean, it was just crazy. Yeah. But Kansas at 25-6, Kentucky at 25-6. A lot of teams at 25-6, and that's what makes it interesting. One other thing on the Big Ten tournament, obviously we will know tonight the big game that really will determine who Purdue faces. It will be Illinois and Iowa at 7:30 on Sunday night. If Iowa pulls what would be a mild upset, winning at as good as Iowa's been playing, if they win Illinois, then Purdue will be the two seed, and Purdue will likely play Michigan State. If Iowa wins or loses to Illinois, then Purdue will play Iowa in all likelihood in that game on Friday. Both games, Purdue locked in to playing Friday night at the Big Ten tournament. That is a done deal at this point, whether Purdue's a two or three seed. But
for my own personal interests here, Iowa has to win for Purdue to not play at 9 p.m., right?
That is correct. You want Iowa to win, and then you would also get a chance at Michigan State, likely as the seventh seed, if Michigan State wins on Thursday. The way it sits, and okay, again, some things can change today a little bit in terms of there's a whole slate of conference games, and that will determine obviously the final. But yes, Purdue will play on Friday night, and then. But you're right, Brian. They're staring right at Illinois. If they get through on Friday, they'll play Illinois in all likelihood, if Illinois doesn't stub its toe on Saturday. Either way, so that will be a big challenge. I agree with you that having to play them again just seems daunting to me, if from a Purdue perspective, just because you beat them twice. But
well, it's just that so much goes into it. I mean, it's so exhausting playing them.
Yeah, I agree.
When you look at what happened to Purdue in the two games that followed their wins over Illinois, it's not a coincidence. You know, they went to Indiana and they, you know, got beat. And then they went to Michigan and, you know, were a complete no-show. And it's not a coincidence that something was taken out of Purdue by those games against Illinois, because it's a lot more difficult than it is playing a lot of other teams in the Big Ten.
Yeah, it is interesting, though. Wisconsin's going to have an interesting road because they're going to have to play maybe Indiana again. Michigan or Indiana are likely to play. So, I mean, I think it'll be an interesting tournament, and it always is. And Brian obviously knows a lot more, or covers it and sees it face to face. But, you know, that it's all about incentive and what you want to play for. But I think Purdue would really help Purdue just to feel better about itself. And maybe it's just me, but if you can play well in that tournament and give yourself some momentum going in, and yet, you know, we've seen quarterfinal losses in that as well. Brian, I want to ask you about the mental state, and it's hard to know. And, you know, you talk to guys and you hear the coach talk about that. It's just a topsy, you know, it's been an interesting season in a lot of ways. In some ways, there's a somewhat of a feeling among some that this team hasn't met expectations, whatever that is, at 25 wins. But how do you think that Purdue internalizes that moving ahead to the postseason? You put more pressure on them, less pressure? How do you view it? I know we're under the guise of the 42 years since the Final Four, and that weighs on every fan or anybody who observes Purdue. But does it matter that much to the basketball team in terms of looking ahead?
Well, I'm sensing a real exhaustion on Purdue's part with the backlash to some of their struggles this season. It just seems like people are losing their minds over this, and it's getting to players, it's getting to coaches and whatnot. And I think that's kind of the world we live in nowadays. I think things are different at Purdue because the fans are so obsessed with the Final Four, and for good reason. I mean, if you just go back and look at the conversation all season long, everything circles back to the Final Four, it seems like. Purdue could turn the ball over in the first half against Iowa, like in December, and it's, oh, they're never going to go to the Final Four because they can't take care of the basketball. Obviously, Purdue's had, you know, some things that they've had to overcome all season long. They have lost some absolute crap games, too. I mean, they have lost on some horrific luck, and I think nobody wants to hear it because it's so much simpler to have someone to blame, but Purdue has had a lot of bad luck. Ron Harper, that shot, I know Purdue could have been better. But the burden of perfection doesn't have to be on the team that loses, you know? Ron Harper's shot was luck. The two shots Wisconsin made at the end of the game. When Purdue played well enough to win that game, obviously they missed some free throws. Outside of that, they defended well. They took care of the basketball. They lost on two garbage shots. That's the simple reality of it. But Purdue has had some things that have cost them games this year, one of which is luck, one of which is their own failings. Obviously, the turnovers kill them. That's part of what's been unfulfilling about this season to this point, is that the way you've lost. That being said, the improbable ways that Purdue has lost at times, that could go the other way for you. I'm not making any promises. I've said all along that I think Purdue is a better team than they are a Big Ten team. But I just think that Purdue has obviously has incurred some really disappointing losses. I think it would be human nature for that to take a toll on them to some extent. That being said, I thought they were okay against Indiana the other day or yesterday. I thought they played okay. I think that stretch in the second half was pretty typical of them, which is not ideal, that they kind of go into these turnover ruts. And as I said before, I think sometimes when they get a lead, they kind of change a little bit for the worse. The last time I can really remember that happening was Minnesota, when they built that big lead and then they started horsing around a little bit. The Michigan State game was a total turnover debacle. You know, start to finish. I don't think that had to do with playing with a lead. I don't think Purdue ever had a lead. at the times when they were turning the ball over. But I think Purdue has probably felt some pressure here too, because of the volcanic reaction, you know, to some of these losses that have in some cases been flukes. So I think this team has not been necessarily the most mature basketball team, the most basketball mature team, I should say. But I think off the court, they're relatively mature. And I think that they've had some pretty unique challenges with this season in terms of having to deal with some real adversity and some real negativity around them during a 25-6 season.
Yeah, Matt Painter. Go ahead, Tom.
We won two games on last second shots they were really dicey, my friend. The Maryland game and the Ohio State game. People want to always forget about that too. That could have gone, those could have gone either way. And what's wrong with having great expectations? Don't you want to be a big-time program? That's what big-time programs have. They have great expectations. And, you know,
right,
I know, but it's a lot to live up to.
And, right, but isn't there a difference between a team's expectations of itself and somebody behind a keyboard's expectation cursing at the players and yelling at the players?
What do you think the team's expectations are, Brian?
To win every game? Do you think they're not trying to lose. I mean,
I understand
that's kind of the mentality that I don't understand about fans. Like, do you think they tried to miss all those free throws? Do you think they turned the ball over on purpose? Do you think somebody's somehow?
Why is it so bizarre that fans get upset? Why is that such a foreign concept?
I just don't know if I can get on board with the people who seem to be actively rooting for Purdue to lose and think like they're part of the solution when they're tweeting at the players about like how bad they suck. Like, if you want your team to play well,
I wouldn't use
telling them they suck is probably not helpful.
Twitter or message boards to gauge a fandom, Brian. So message boards and Twitter, who typically goes on those? The negative people, right?
Well,
yeah.
What are we going to exit poll coming out of the arena? Like, how do you feel about the game? You know,
how do you think fans? Hey, Brian, how do you think fans felt?
How do you think fans felt?
Yeah.
About what?
The game yesterday.
Relieved. Disturbed.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I don't know. I mean, I would like to think.
I think you're answering your own question.
If I were I'm a Yankees fan.
That's Cowboys fan too.
If the Yankees had barely beaten the Red Sox in Game 7 of a series, my first reaction would be I'd be thrilled. I'd be exhausted. I'd be happy more than anything. I wouldn't run to Twitter to tell all the Yankees that they suck. I wouldn't be tweeting at the sports writers to predict doom for the team that I theoretically want to win. I do think with the toxicity of social media seems like a weird side of the dynamic to take here. I don't understand the mentality of thinking of wanting a team to do well, but being as toxic about it as possible in a public setting. I will never understand.
Those are fans from the Pac-12 to the ACC, buddy.
Oh, understood. I don't agree. I think they're at Purdue.
If you think Oregon State fans and if you think even USC fans are as into this as Big Ten fans, I don't know about that. I also think that Purdue's fans are a little bit more wound up because of what I mentioned before, that they want to go to the Final Four so bad, which I completely understand. I mean, that's been the mentality of Purdue fans for as long as I've been covering them, that is what they want more than anything. But it's a process getting to the end of the season every year, and every blip in the road is distinct. Typically, you've seen things change for the better very much in the NCAA tournament before. You've seen things turn for the worse in the NCAA tournament a few times before. But the whole they're going to get beat in the first round stuff after every game is just – I don't even know what to make of it anymore.
Well, I think Matt Painter and in the senior day thing, acknowledged it. He said, you know,
fans, I know you guys want us to be 31-0, but it's not like Purdue doesn't want to be 31-0. I mean, it's,
but I think it also speaks, it also speaks to the maturity. This team's just got to get past. They just got to focus on what they got to focus on and try to, and there are other programs that are in the same boat, but
I think the cause for alarm right now is the fact the team hasn't played well for quite a while.
Well, they played well at Wisconsin. That was two games ago. They played well enough at Wisconsin to do everything they needed to do. They came back from 12 down in the second half or whatever it was. They took care of the ball. They defended as well as they have all season long. They did a great job on Johnny Davis, and they lost on two bank shots. And it's human nature to come back from a game like that and probably be a little bit deflated. Purdue did everything they needed to do at Wisconsin, and they weren't rewarded for it. So they played well there.
Yeah, I agree that I think also, and we've hit on this before, that Purdue, a lot of Purdue's problem is November and how you
– yes.
The perception of
warped reality.
Even though they really didn't, they didn't really boat race North Carolina or Villanova. They did Florida State. I just think that that's, and then you get ranked number one and whatever. And it's a new experience for Purdue that you never been, because you're right, Tom. I think a lot of people have that perception. They haven't played well. And some of that is true in terms of how much you've been ahead of folks and not, you know, you haven't been able to just, they haven't destroyed anybody. I don't think. I mean, and that's been an interesting, you know, almost the Florida State game was kind of an interesting part of that because that game was close for a while. And then Purdue just you know, we use the term boat raced them at the end. And it was a big score. I know Florida State's not having a great year, but it's that type of game. You just haven't had many of those. And that perception that you should have been doing that, I think, has been pervasive.
I'm going to pat myself on the back here real quick, if you don't mind. Even when Purdue was number one in the country, when they were winning the way they were winning in November, I said in my post-game stuff, what's going to happen when they can't just outscore everyone? Things are going to change when you get to Big Ten play. We're going to see what happens here. And the things that win in Big Ten play aren't the things that Purdue's been great at. They never did a great job taking care of the basketball on a consistent basis. They never did it. Only up until recently, they weren't the best half-court defensive team. You know, that. They're the worst foul shooting team in the Big Ten. The stuff that wins in Big Ten play is not what Purdue's really good at. So comparing November to Big Ten, the Big Ten season, it's a little bit apples to oranges in that sense. Even when Purdue was rolling over everybody in November, there were still very real questions about this team that I think people just overlooked. They just, we're number one in the country. We're going to go undefeated this year. I don't think anybody really reasonably expected them to go undefeated, but I think people thought it was going to be easy the rest of the way, that Purdue was just going to be able to kind of roll through their schedule on their way to their coronation to the Final Four and things like that. And I don't know if that was ever reality.
Yeah. You look back at the Iowa game in December and the Rutgers game. Remember the Iowa game, as you guys know, the game that got you to number one or got you the win, you know, darn near lost that game. I mean, they came back. Purdue was up 20, got down to three. They were showing signs of this, some of these challenges, as you said early on. And it's good discussion and an unsolvable problem, but it is going to be interesting to see what transpires for Purdue here, not only next weekend, but in the NCAA tournament. That's the understatement of the year. Because
I think Purdue has had to, you know, be more mature than it's been, you know, from a basketball perspective. I think this was kind of their turn to be the most experienced team in the Big Ten, kind of things like that, even as a not exactly an experienced team. I keep bringing this up, and I'm sure people jump out of their seats to scream excuses at me, but the COVID year really hurt Purdue, because without Brad Davison, Wisconsin's not what Wisconsin is. Without Trent Frazier and DeMonte Williams, Illinois is not what Illinois is. That changed the competitive landscape of the league. When you look at Kyle Young being back at Ohio State, when you look at Jordan Bohannon being back at Iowa, Purdue and Michigan State right now are the only teams likely headed to the NCAA tournament from the Big Ten that don't have a COVID senior. That's not a coincidence. I know that sounds like, you know, an excuse, but I think that's reality. I think Purdue dealt with a more experienced and more poised Big Ten than they would have had to otherwise. Everyone knows my opinion on the COVID year. I think it was the NCAA reaching for a cheap PR win because they're a complete PR disaster ordinarily anyway. But I think that was part of this as well. They didn't really have a chance to grow into as mature a team as they needed to be. This year was different than last year because of expectations, because of the fact that you were getting everyone's best shot every single game, because there were fans in the crowd. Things were different this year for Purdue. This is a different Purdue team from last year too. Zach Edey overtook Travion Williams. Ethan Morton basically replaced Brandon Newman. For all intents and purposes, Caleb First is a freshman. You're playing through Jaden Ivey way more than you did most of the season last year. This was a very different Purdue team from last year, and there were some adjustments there that, you know, didn't necessarily play to Purdue's favor either.
Yeah, I think one last question, and I want to get to some football real quick, but Jaden Ivey is another interesting not a lightning rod, but just because he's been some one of the ones that's turned the ball over. He is not, he is the guy that's Purdue's alpha that most would say could, if Purdue's going to get to the Final Four and get deep into the tournament, he's going to lead them there. Where do you see him, Brian, right now and his performance on the court, and what, you know, can he have, and this is, I know, overly simplified, but can he have a little bit of a Carson Edwards resurrection like Edwards did in 2019 in the tournament? I know they're different players, but how do you view that?
I think he didn't play well yesterday. I think part of that is a credit to Indiana. Part of that is he didn't make great decisions. I think the ball stuck in his hands. I think he had to move the ball out of crowds more. He just didn't do a great job with his decision making, and that's part of what you deal with sometimes with really good, you know, ball dominant players who you need them to be aggressive. I think Purdue has, as the Big Ten season's gone on, Big Ten coaches aren't idiots. You know, they're going to do everything they can to not let Purdue in transition. They're going to do everything they can to keep extra people dealing with Jaden Ivey. The defenses are good. The contact is often not called. I also think that, you know, as the game condenses a little bit, as opposed to non-conference play, I think things really change for players like that. When you look at the complexion of Purdue's team, and I haven't really talked about this much because I haven't seen the need to. Purdue has two avenues of alpha offense. They've got the post and they've got Jaden Ivey. And those two things contradict one another 100%. They do not complement each other at all, because Jaden Ivey needs space. He needs an open lane. They've got big guys who are constantly bringing extra attention into the lane. This is not a team that's necessarily built to run as well, because they play so big and, but in, you know, in the front court and whatnot. He's best in transition. He's best kind of getting in the lane. When you look at what Jaden Ivey does from a complimentary perspective for the big guys, you know, he's not really the big time catch and shoot guy that will spread the floor for you. When he drives, you know, sometimes he gets all the way to the rim, and that's not necessarily the best drive and kick kind of situation. This has been a little bit of an imbalance for Purdue, and it's not really a problem, but it's simply the byproduct of Jaden Ivey and Zach Edey getting so good so fast. But there has been a little bit of a kind of a tricky mix to make work here. This has not been the best fit, you know, from a basketball complexion perspective for Jaden Ivey's skill set. That he's been so productive anyway, that he's been so good, you know, for most of the season is, you know, kind of a credit to him, but also a credit to Purdue to kind of figure things out a little bit. This has not been an easy mix to make work at a level that had Purdue as the number one offense in college basketball for most of the season.
Tom, I want to ask you, as we get to now into the second week of spring football, some storylines, obviously, and you're just your impressions, because you've been able to watch them. You're going to be able to watch them again on Monday, and then you'll probably be, won't be in practice, but we'll have the opportunity, obviously, to talk to coaches throughout the rest of spring ball. But just your overriding impressions of what you're seeing. You know, you've really done a good job of documenting about really what the storyline is. One of them is the backup quarterback and how you figure that out, and the fact that you got a lot of injuries and new guys trying to fit in. But what have been your impressions as we look at week one?
I should have made my ID job with a HUD or something, huh?
Yeah.
It's fun. You know, I've told you guys, sometimes I like practice better than games. It's informal, can be up close. And pretty, like you said, Alan has plenty of storylines this spring. And of course you hit the big one, the who's not there. Right. So you never want to take what you see in the spring overly seriously at this point. It's a good chance for some young guys to get some valuable reps, because some of these key personnel, they certainly are missing. So we talked about backup quarterback. No doubt we talked to the quarterbacks this week, and we all know it's going to be Austin Burton, Michael Olamo. Brian Brohm said that's going to be a battle that continues and wages for a while. You know, fun talking to Brady Allen this week, right? The first time he's talked to the media as a member of the Purdue Boilermakers, and he's every bit of 6'5" or 6'6". I talked to him on the phone a few times, but first time I'd really stood next to the kid, and he's he has that big time size and seems very personable. And from talking to the other quarterbacks and talking to Brian Brohm, he certainly sounds like he has that mindset of wanting to excel and wanting to be teachable and wanting to learn. And he probably just wants to go too fast, right? Yeah, then I guess that's a good problem to have. You want to learn it all right now, and you can't do that. And so, again, it looks like Purdue got him a very intriguing prospect under center. And the Boilers have three practices in the books. Like you said, Alan, one more open to the public on Monday. They'll go on Wednesday. Then they'll be off, I think, until the 20th for spring break. And I believe there's a scrimmage Wednesday. And we're going to talk to Coach Brohm after that. So a quick snapshot of the team through the first five practices at that juncture. So, yeah, it's a lot going on there. And, you know, they're still shopping the portal. If anybody who follows on social media saw where a couple kids announced that they've got Purdue offers, a running back from Western Kentucky, Noah Whittington. He's a smaller back. He came to college as a wide receiver, about 5'10", 190, and an offensive tackle from Kent State, Daniel Johnson, who's actually from Canada. So we all know Purdue's looking for running backs and offensive linemen. Those seem like two kind of guys Purdue could maybe be able to land. From my rudimentary research, they both look like they're quality players that could bring something to two positions that need some help. So there's always storylines percolating. You guys know that. There was a junior day this weekend. I think there's another one coming up as well. We had the combine this weekend, right? I guess the big headline there was, or there are a couple of big headlines, right? First, George Karlaftis didn't run a 40. I guess he's going to run one his pro day at Purdue on March 29th. He did everything else. And I want to try to get a hold of George if I can, just to sort of get his firsthand account of how things went in Indy for him. And then David Bell, I think the best way to summarize his combine experience was not ideal. We all knew he was going to run that well. It looks like he didn't perform too well in some of the other measurables, like the broad jump and the vertical and whatnot. But of course, like I say, and everybody says, guys, just turn on the film and watch David Bell play, and that's all you really need to know about the kid. So again, I was watching some combine this weekend. It's crazy we even care anything about what goes on in Indianapolis. It's a fun time of year to measure those guys. But again, we all know, at least I always think, until you get pads on, you don't know what these guys can really do.
Man, though, I think George Karlaftis, I watched a little bit of his combine, said, man, he's just so impressive in terms of just how he moves and how, and we all know him as a guy that is going to get better or is still raw. Yeah, you keep hearing that about him and when is he fully going to mature, but I thought he was interesting. And then one other guy that Tyrone Tracy that kind of caught your eye, passes the eyeball test. Watching the film, what's your impressions?
You know, he came as a wide receiver from Iowa. He's from Indianapolis. They're playing him at running back as well. You know, Brian Brohm even said what we all surmise he's going to be used like Jackson Anthrop was last year in particular. Probably going to be a return man, or at least get a good look as being a return man as well. I kind of wonder if why not just make the kid a running back, honestly. Depends on what Purdue gets out of the portal. Maybe he's a guy that can carry the ball 10 or 12 times a game for you. Mix him in with King Daru. But anyway, I digress. But you're right. Tyrone Tracy's been an early impressive newcomer, if you will. We've seen a little bit of Elijah Kenyon, the Auburn transfer. He's a big wide receiver, guys, about 6'5", about 220. He missed the first practice. It was out there the last couple of days as well. So, yeah, Scotty Humpich, too. I think they like Scotty Humpich, the Murray State transfer, the Leo. Boy, he looks the part, too. He's a full-grown man. And looks like he can play in space a little bit as well. So, you know what? You want these guys to hit the ground running when you bring them in as transfers. And Purdue certainly looks like it has a handful right now that could end up playing some key roles for him in the fall.
Yeah, Tracy, 205 pounds, big enough to run the football, certainly.
He's too tall, too.
To take it with some of the time. Brian, last word for you. Anything else that you want to say? We've had a good spirited discussion today. Anything else from your perspective as you look ahead to this week?
Not really. I think Purdue should want to win the Big Ten tournament. Again, I'm not necessarily saying that players ever take the floor thinking, hey, cool if we lose. But I think the Big Ten tournament's important. I might be in the minority. In that regard, but I think that Purdue ought to go to Indy, to quote Major League. Yeah. There's only one thing left to do, win the whole thing. But I might be in the minority in that.
I agree with you.
The last thing Purdue wants to do, some Purdue people would want to do, is play that game on Sunday right before Selection Sunday and then not get that extra time off before the tournament. But I think when you have a chance to win a championship, go win a championship.
You know, it's interesting. Last thing I'll say, that condensed time between they'll play Friday night and they'll be done by Sunday afternoon. I mean, you're going to play in essence three games and two and a little bit fraction days. So even if you do play that third game, it'll be interesting. A lot of coverage on the site this week and we'll have spring football as well. Guys, thanks for your time today. Always good discussion. We appreciate that. Appreciate all of you for watching and listening, and I want to thank the Union Club Hotel for its sponsorship. So we'll be back next week. I'm going to guess with Selection Sunday. I'm not sure exactly when we'll do our Saturday simulcast, probably Sunday, but if it just depends a little bit on how things shake out at the Big Ten tournament. So have a great week, everybody. Thanks to all for watching and listening, and we'll see you next week. And make sure you check into the site early and often this week. There'll be a lot of stuff on it. So thanks so much.